And it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here on March 19th, 2015, at a secret location in the Pacific Northwest, asking you to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers of all the perpetrators, and web pages you can visit for more information and to get involved. Let's start with our first story. Here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. They write, both the Hebgen and Gardner basins west and north of Yellowstone have been relatively quiet this week. This will be our last week and the Gardner camp will be open and our focus will then fully turn to the coming spring migration here in the Hebgen Basin in Montana. Patrols are out every day, all day, monitoring the buffalo's migration corridors, keeping an eye on the highways, and getting ready for any harassment of these gentle giants. As many of you have heard, the current interagency bison management plan is set to expire this year, and an announcement of the start of the process to draft a new plan was released this week. The state of Montana and Yellowstone National Park are seeking public input on the plan, with a 90-day scoping comment period open until June 15th. As always, Buffalo Field Campaign will be a strong voice for wild buffalo throughout this process, and we will need everyone, that means you, to participate. As soon as we have formulated our comments, we will craft a take action alert and get it out to you all. Please learn as much as you can in the meantime and hold off on sending in comments for now. There will also be opportunity to attend public meetings, and we'll let you know as soon as they are scheduled. Thank you all so much for making it possible for us to be on the ground and in the field with America's last wild buffalo. This is important firsthand perspective gives Buffalo Field Campaign the unique ability to be the strongest voice for our friends, the buffalo, and we are grateful to each of you for allowing us the honor to stand in their defense. You can contact the Buffalo Field Campaign at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, their zip code 59758. You can give them a call, area code 406-646-0070. That's area code 406-646-0070. And for all this information and more, visit the webpage www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And Bay Area abalone poachers have received heavy penalties. Three San Francisco men received thousands of dollars in fines and other penalties after pleading no contest to illegally poaching 59 abalone in November of 2014. The daily bag limit for abalone is 3. Jinfu Wu, 43, Wei Ku Wu, 27, and Jin He Li, 35, all of San Francisco, were each fined $20,000 and sentenced to 36 months of probation and 240 hours of community service. The men also faced permanent revocation of their fishing and hunting licenses and the loss of all seized fishing gear. On November 5, 2014, California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers with the Special Operations Unit observed a suspicious van with one man inside parked on the side of the road near the town of Elk in Mendocino County. The officers began surveillance on the van and ultimately observed two divers in the water near the location where the vehicle was parked. The divers appeared to be taking gross overlimits of abalone. As the officers watched, the suspects made multiple trips into the water and appeared to hide their illegally harvested abalone on the shore. Once they gathered their catch, they left the scene in the van. Wildlife officers later contacted the suspects at their San Francisco residence and arrested all three for conspiracy to illegally harvest abalone and combined possession of a gross overlimit of abalone. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife Special Operations Unit is a team of undercover wildlife officers who specialize in investigation of persons suspected of selling California's fish and wildlife on the black market. Abalone is a prized resource in California. Seasons and limits are highly regulated to protect the resource. For complete information on abalone fishing regulations and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, please go to www.dfg.ca.gov. And here is a message from Crow, his response to GTAC's withdrawal, this story by Crow, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Editor's note, Crow is currently serving a 9-month sentence in county jail for taking part in the disruption of mining activities in the Pinoki Hills. After dedicating approximately 5 years of our lives to the struggle to stop the proposed taconite mine in northern Wisconsin and keep the Pinocchio Hills therein wild, myself and I'm sure many others are elated to hear that Geobic Taconite, or GTAC, is closing their office in Hurley, Wisconsin. Subsequently, they are withdrawing their forces from the Pinocchio Hills. Due to the insurmountable numbers of wetlands, GTAC has no economic desire to mitigate post-proposed destruction. They are seemingly disengaged from the project for now. As a botanist and participant of plant surveys conducted within the Bad River watershed in the Pinocchio Hills area, along with several others, the power of plants and their surrounding ecosystems astounds me. In conjunction with direct action and grassroots organizing, the mine proposal is at least temporarily stopped for a good deal of years. My spirits are rejuvenated in seeing that people can really make a difference. We must stay vigilant and never stop fighting, striving, and preparing to be more on the offensive is always a good plan. The Pinocchios are not truly saved from the threats of industrial resource extraction, just like anywhere, until they're intentionally set aside for something other than slated destruction, whether it be mining, logging, or anything else, or permanently looked after by some kind of protectors, the Ogeechita, or other. It should be noted that the Pinocchios are not temporarily saved due to simply manifesting protection. They surely cannot hurt and cannot strengthen actions. I believe it does just that, strengthens actions, it does not create them. The Pinocchio Hills are not saved due to folks sitting idly by in the face of potential deadly resource extraction. We must thank grassroots organizing that derived from indigenous communities and the will to survive, as well as honor old traditions of living that are and were paramount in fostering a continued relationship with the forest outside of economic gain. We should all extend many thanks to all of those who helped establish Harvest Camp in the Pinocchio Hills, opposing the world's largest iron mine proposal, those who have lived there and helped it survive, and or those that can continue to do so. It's been a long road, and we are not yet at its end. We must continue to support each other and try and help each other embrace methods of existing that require less mining whenever possible, while keeping in mind the U.S. military-industrial complex will utilize more resources than any one individual and or groups of people combined over multiple lifetimes. One cannot stop something as simple as a mine with a liberal guilt trip idea of voting with your dollar. It is not that simple. So, in the midst of this daunting and eventually forced paradigm shift due to lack of certain resources, we must continue to oppose and disrupt business as usual for industrial resource extraction projects whenever possible, simultaneously recognizing disparities between different groups and demographics of people that affect their abilities to be involved with or help on certain issues. Whenever possible, resist by existing, never standing idly by. For those of you who have dropped off the face of the earth and started your rad land project, or just want to be done with it all, never forget that the folks that are less fortunate and non-human creatures you've left behind. Use your privilege for good. Do not be a rope puller. Someday, they may come for your land. Community is never obsolete. Find balance between misanthropy and compassion for the currently living human and non. It's always a lovely and harsh reminder that we need the earth. The earth does not need us, though. And received anonymously from Biteback, on the night of March 16, 2015, a gate on the aviary was opened at the Estacada Game Farm, 25395 South Beaver Creek Road in Beaver Creek, Oregon, liberating a flock of ring-necked pheasants into the wild. These birds were bred, among other reasons, to suffer and die in pre-orchestrated canned hunts, a practice that represents the height of human arrogance and disregard towards animal life. This liberation is dedicated to the individuals who are currently being prosecuted and/or imprisoned under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. This liberation is also done as a reminder that when we don't allow fear to prevent us from taking action to directly free animals, we render the AETA obsolete. Signed, ALF. State, federal, and French wildlife officers are working together to stop illegal imports. A San Jose woman has been served with a fine, community service, and probation for possession of several taxidermied protected wildlife species and attempting to import a taxidermied protected owl from France. Dora Martha Jimenez Zepeda, 42, of San Jose, pled no contest to one count of violating Fish and Game Code Section 3503.5, unlawful possession of birds of prey, and forfeited several other taxidermied animals that are illegal to possess in California. The plea deposition also resulted in a $3,600 fine to be paid into the Santa Clara County Fish and Wildlife Propagation Fund, 300 hours of community service, and 3 years of probation. This is one of the most unusual cases we have seen in a while, said California Department of Fish and Wildlife Assistant Chief Bob Farrell. The international trafficking of protected species usually falls under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but since some of these animals are also protected under state law, it was a particularly complicated case. We appreciate the collaboration with our French and federal counterparts, as well as the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office, to bring this investigation to a close. In June of 2014, California Department of Fish and Wildlife law enforcement officers received a call through CalTIP, the line from a wildlife officer at the National de la Chasse et de la Faune Sauvage, the French National Hunting and Wildlife Office. The French officer had been investigating the unlawful sale of a barn owl to a California buyer through an eBay French website. The barn owl is a protected species in France. After several months of investigation, CDFW wildlife officers, along with officers from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, located the suspect at her residence in San Jose. Inside the one-bedroom apartment, officers found more than 50 stuffed and mounted animals, including a full-bodied African lion. Officers seized three species of hawk, two western screech owls, one long-eared owl, two barn owls, one egret, one sea turtle, all protected species, all prohibited species to possess. She was allowed to keep the other mounts not prohibited by state or federal law. The suspect stated she purchased most of her taxidermy from eBay and denied having killed any of the wildlife herself. Non-game migratory birds such as birds of prey are protected under both California law and the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Sea turtles are federally protected under the Endangered Species Act and the internationally under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, or CITES. CalTIP is a confidential secret witness program that encourages the public to provide the California Department of Fish and Wildlife with factual information leading to the arrest of poachers and polluters. If you witness a poaching or polluting incident or any fish and wildlife violation, or have information about such violations, please call 1-888-334-CALTIP. That is 1-888-334-2258, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can text anonymously to TIP 411. That is 847-411. Wildlife officers can respond directly, resulting in an anonymous two-way conversation. And starving sea lion pups inundate Southern California's rescue centers in this story by Marty Graham of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Animal rescue centers in California are being inundated with stranded starving sea lion pups, raising the possibility that the facilities could soon be overwhelmed, the federal agency coordinating the rescue said. The precise cause is not clear, but scientists believe the sea lions are starving as a result of a scarcity of natural prey that forces nursing mothers to venture farther out to sea for food, leaving their young behind for longer periods. As facilities reach capacity, it will likely not be possible to rescue and rehabilitate every impacted animal, said Justin Visbeck, stranding coordinator at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This year, a record of 1,450 starving pups have been rescued in Southern California. Mary Beth Steen, director of development of the Pacific Marine Mammal Center in Laguna Beach, said the center has taken in 285 animals, 10 times last year's tally of 28 and double the count for 2013. We are particularly concerned because the stranding season usually starts in March and ends in June, she said. These are extraordinarily high numbers for this early in the season. Last Friday, SeaWorld shut down its sea lion shows so that the San Diego-based company could use the staff and facilities, including building two temporary pools for the pups in anticipation of more rescues. SeaWorld has taken in nearly 500 of the starving animals, according to SeaWorld spokesperson Kelly Terry. The pups are usually born in June and July and nurse until January, remaining on shore while their mothers go to sea for food, according to David Bard of the Marine Mammal Care Center in San Pedro, California, which has taken in more than 330 of the starving pups since January. NOAA scientists believe that the mothers aren't easily finding food and are staying away longer than the normal 1 to 2 day journey because of changes in water temperature. At some point, the pups seemed to be heading out to sea on their own and washing up starving and exhausted on California beaches in record numbers. Most need help to start eating again, and veterinarian Hendrik Nolan said that some of the pups have come in with 5 or 6 pounds of rocks in their stomachs. They eat them to feel full and have been able to regurgitate them once we can get them starting to eat again, Nolan said. Richardson Grove Attack Redo announced in this story from Bay Area Coalition for Headwaters as found on the Earth First Newswire. It appeared for a time that the jackhammer shovels that had been called off excavation duty around feeder roots of giant redwoods in Richardson Grove State Park, California. However, Caltrans has just announced they plan to renew starting again. It appeared for a time that the jackhammer shovels that had been called off excavation duty around feeder roots of the redwood giants in Richardson Grove State Park, California. However, Caltrans just announced they plan to release new documents in the fall of 2015 to restart the project with the goal of making Highway 101 more accessible to oversized trucks. This announcement came only 3 months after news celebrated in early December of 2014 that the highway agency would be withdrawing their permit documents in an agreement with the courts. Successful lawsuits, thanks to Epic, CBD, CATS, and individuals, plus a long and determined campaign, led to this short-lived victory. Once Caltrans environmental assessment documents are released, a public comment period will commence, but there is no indication of a different, more ecologically sound approach, since they continue to claim publicly that there will be no adverse environmental impact on the old-growth redwood trees in this nearly 100-year-old park. The problems are many, but boil down to several key points. Since redwoods have no tap roots, their laterally spreading root systems are particularly vulnerable. Richardson Grove is a protected state park and should be off limits to this disruptive highway work in the first place, and this highway realignment, along with the Willits and Smith River Caltrans projects, is essentially a gift to the trucking industry at taxpayers' expense. Some of the dirty politics behind the project were on view when the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors invited Caltrans to give an update at their March meeting, treating them like the injured party, as Caltrans complained about their high expenses, well, it's our money, actually, and about being sued. The supervisors did not ask why their planning documents were so inadequate and incorrect in the first place, nor did they send them packing as they should have. Caltrans does donate to local election campaigns. Stay tuned for the notice of the comment period. We will keep you informed. Further north, in the Smith River Canyon, Caltrans agreed to a July 2014 to reassess threats to the protected salmon populations of its Highway 199-197 highway expansion project. The project is halted until such an analysis is completed. A legitimate review was never done for salmon and its habitat in this pristine riparian area, unfettered by dams. Instead, Caltrans proceeded with what a district judge called a haphazard consultation with fisheries agencies. Once again, irreplaceable natural values were shunted aside at substantial taxpayer cost for the sake of the trucking industry. Last spring, Caltrans vowed it would start blasting in the Rock Canyon in May, no doubt with repercussions as dire as that would suggest. While news regarding the Smith River project brought some temporary relief, the Willits bypass barrels forward, ecological devastation and native sites protection be damned. Caltrans and other agencies have turned a deaf ear to arguments to downsize the northern interchange where the bypass rejoins Highway 101. The glorified off-ramp has a huge footprint designed for a four-lane bypass when in reality two lanes are joining two lanes. Much wetlands acreage and native ecological archaeological sites could be spared by downsizing the interchange. The latest drama, however, came with a crash and a boom heard round the valley on January 22nd when 150 feet of bypass highway infrastructure collapsed, temporarily trapping two workers, injuring five, one seriously. Little Lake Fire Chief Carl McGann said he found it amazing no one was killed. As well as workers, salmon and other aquatic life on Hell Creek were impacted due to alkaline wet cement spilling into the creek. This is certainly not the first debacle emblematic of Caltrans poor planning and engineering. Disasters on this Mendocino County project seem to parallel those on the Bay Bridge project carried out by many of the same Caltrans contractors. In a climate of persistent activism, agitation on the northern interchange continues as the Pomo people in both Coyote Valley and Sherwood Valley pursued a stop to and remedies for the destruction of irreplaceable archaeological sites. Agencies have almost belligerently been non-responsive on this issue, which brought our coalition protest to the San Francisco offices of the Army Corps of Engineers on November 18, 2014, for a large, loud, and hours-long presence at the agency responsible for oversight of the Caltrans. Intrepid activists in Willits and Coyote Valley, with whom we are collaborating, continue to push on these issues and called for an independent investigation of the highway collapse. And the poaching vessel Kunlun has been detained in Thailand. The Interpol wanted internationally blacklisted poaching vessel Kunlun has been detained in Phuket, Thailand on fisheries-related violations. The action comes just over 2 months after the vessel was caught by the New Zealand Navy engaged in illegal fishing in Australian waters, and just over a month after it was intercepted by the Sea Shepherd ship Sam Simon in possession of banned fishing equipment again in Australian waters. The Kunlun, which is one of six vessels that are known to still engage in illegal and reported unregulated fishing for toothfish in the Southern Ocean, was detained in a coordinated effort between international policing organizations, Interpol, and law enforcement authorities in Thailand, Australia, and New Zealand. The Kunlun has a long history of suspected fishing violations and is believed to have links to known Spanish crime syndicate Videl Armadores. Since 2008, the poaching vessel has changed names at least 10 times in order to avoid prosecution. In January, the Kunlun was issued with an Interpol purple notice for illegally fishing for toothfish inside an area regulated by the Convention for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources. Captain Sid Chakravarti of the Sea Shepherd ship Sam Simon said, "The Australian government has both a legal and moral responsibility to defend its waters from poachers who wish to exploit it. Yesterday, in cooperation with Interpol and the Thai and New Zealand authorities, they showed that they take those responsibilities seriously." And Cascadia Wildlands defeats White Castle clear-cutting in court. In this story by Nick Cady of Cascadia Wildlands, judge rejects ecoforestry clear-cutting on ONC lands. A U.S. District Court judge has ruled in favor of conservation groups Oregon Wild and Cascadia Wildlands in their legal challenge of a controversial clear-cut logging project on public lands in Douglas County, Oregon. At stake in the case was the Bureau of Land Management White Castle logging project, which proposed clear-cutting of 160 acres of 100-year-old trees using a controversial methodology developed by Drs. Jerry Franklin and Norm Johnson, referred to as, quote, variable retention regeneration harvest, unquote, sometimes referred to as ecoforestry. In her ruling, Judge Ann Aiken ruled that the BLM's environmental review fell far short of fully considering the full range of harm that could result from clear-cutting. This ruling proves the BLM can't just rename a clear-cut something else and then expect it to suddenly be acceptable, said Sean Stevens, executive director of Oregon Wild. The White Castle timber sale was a test to see if ecoforest clear-cutting could pass legal muster or public scrutiny, and it failed. Attorney Jennifer Schwartz argued on behalf of the conservation plaintiffs and repeatedly highlighted the scientific disputes surrounding the project and variable retention harvest, especially its implementation in older forests and spotted owl critical habitat. The court ultimately determined that the spotted owl's recovery plan, the spotted owl's critical habitat proposal, comments from the public and scientists, and Franklin and Johnson's own reports demonstrated the existence of a substantial dispute casting serious doubt upon the reasonableness of BLM's decision to harvest forest stands over 80 years old. By the BLM's own admission, the White Castle sale was intended as a prototype for greatly expanded clear-cutting on other BLM ONC lands, a factor that weighed heavily in the judge's ruling. The judge found the precedential nature of the project worthy of greater scrutiny. Project materials described the pilot projects as a test of new harvest methods and new policies that could supplant BLM's current risk-averse strategy of avoiding regeneration harvesting and other active management methods. Approval of the White Castle project will not have binding impact on future projects, but it will, by design, shape BLM forestry methods and strategies moving forward. The scariest part of this project was its potential to set the tone for logging across 2 million acres of Western Oregon BLM land, said Nick Cady, legal director of Cascadia Wildlands. The project was mired in scientific uncertainty and was the obvious result of political pressure to bail out county politicians by returning clear-cutting to our public forests. I hope this ruling convinces the BLM to revise its intentions for our public lands. The proposed timber sale lies within publicly owned forest in the South Myrtle Creek watershed near the community of Canyonville. The Roseburg BLM district proposed the controversial ecoforestry logging method as a justification to clear-cut over 187 acres, including 160 acres of trees over a century old. Bulldozing roads and other destructive activities associated with the project would also have targeted additional trees over 150 years old. Federal biologists with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service have acknowledged nearly 200 acres of habitat for threatened wildlife could be damaged or destroyed by the logging. In her ruling, the judge found the likely impacts of this clear-cutting to require the BLM to conduct much more rigorous environmental analysis than the one they have done so far, despite the fact that BLM has been largely meeting its timber targets for the last 15 years, primarily through non-controversial thinning of young forests. The agency has recently pursued more controversial projects as a way to increase logging. BLM claimed that clear-cutting the White Castle Forest would benefit the environment by removing mature trees in order to favor shrubs and brush, even though such habitats are not rare like old forests. As part of the same planning process, Roseburg BLM carried out a similar and related clear-cutting project in younger forests known as Buck Rising. Conservationists did not challenge the Buck Rising project in court, but they were not pleased with the results. BLM claims that since they intend to retain a few patches of standing trees, it isn't really a clear-cut, said Doug Haken of Oregon Wild. Anyone who has seen the aftermath of logging at Buck Rising would have a difficult time explaining the difference between acres of stumps and rutted earth created by ecoforestry and those created by old-style clear-cutting. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is normally produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you can hear a rebroadcast of this show on Fridays at 3 o'clock. You can also tune in to YEG Radio Free Edmonton at yegradio.blogspot.com. And the rebroadcast there is 2 o'clock on Saturday and 11 o'clock on Sundays. You can also tune in to KRFP Moscow, Idaho, Radio Free Moscow at 90.3, their new high-power frequency, Monday nights at 9:30 p.m. Or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number for all, where you can listen to this and previously recorded shows. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is normally produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, but this week is at a secret location in the Pacific Northwest. We want to thank you for listening and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.